housing is becoming a national issue. Even though we're a tech company, we never wanted to lose that human feel of we're solving a real problem for real families and real human beings. This isn't about just the dollars and cents and the money. This is about solving a social problem.
This is the naked truth about real estate investing. Your host, Javier, has already been through all the brain damage of this business, so you don't have to go through it. That way, you're not exposed to all of the risk of losing your shirt or getting caught with your pants down. So let's dive into another No BS episode right now.
Hello, everybody. I am Javier Hinojo, your host of The Naked Truth about Real Estate Investing. And today I have Garrett Moore, all the way from San Diego. I'm in North Carolina. He's in San Diego. By the way, I got my dad to move from San Diego like 5 years ago. I don't know how I did it, but I got him to move to North Carolina. He has a technology company. I think he's got like four PhDs. I think he graduated from Stanford and then went to Yale for middle school. And I'm not really sure what else he's got. He's got a pretty nice resume. He's got, you know, I'll let you guys, he did some part-time Navy work. I don't know, Navy Reserves. I'm not sure, but we'll talk about that a little bit more. So Garrett, why don't you do a better job than I did?
Javier, thank you so much for having me on the show. I appreciate it. So my kind of quick background on me, I grew up in Arizona. I was a sports kid. I love sports. Good in school. Those two kind of collided, got a chance to play football at Stanford. So loved it. Got my degree in mechanical engineering. Quickly, you realize that you're an imposter and everybody's more talented than you. And you don't get to be an athlete the rest of your life. You got to grow up and make a living. And in that process, did some soul searching, decided I wanted to be in the military because it was kind of a very similar corollary to the camaraderie of team sports. And in for a penny, in for a pound, might as well go big. So decided to try out for the Navy SEALs. Got picked up, spent 12 years as a SEAL officer with the usual kind of deployments all around the world. And it was a great, great experience. Fantastically formative. It gives you a chance to lead, see the world, solve dynamic problems, do some cool stuff on the fly. That said, where all of this converges is by the end of my career, I married three young kids, go to build my first house, turned into an accidental real estate developer and run headlong into the drama that is construction and real estate. And in that process, I was still active duty at the time. I realized just how broken it was. And it formed a serious pain point personally for me where I said, this is worth pursuing. Let's figure out how to solve this.
Yeah. I tell you what, right before we were chatting a little bit before we jumped on and we were going to build a house, right? I've had a lot of friends that they build, man. They build and they build a lot, which is awesome. And when my wife said, hey, maybe we should build a house, I just felt like all this pressure on me, you know, back from my flipping days, you know, when I used to do like 50 a year, I got a little bit depressed, to be honest with you. I felt like, oh, you know, anyways, but it's super cool. So you said, hey, there's a problem here. This is not the right process. So give me a couple of examples. Like what made you bang your head against the wall when you started the construction on your house?
It's the usual story. It's time and money. I mean, that's what people care about. That's what investors care about. It's what homeowners care about. I mean, quality matters too, but really at the end of the day, where you get hosed in construction is, you know, twice the time, twice the price. So I thought I would shortchange the system and build offsite. So I actually had, it was a home in San Diego that had to be custom because of the local neighborhood. So I had it built up in Idaho as modules. Okay. They shipped them all the way down, paid 10 grand a truckload, whatever it was, and craned them into the job site. Well, what I realized is that even with that, construction is still just tremendously fragmented. It's the old analogy, a camel is a horse designed by committee. That's how the project felt. And so for me, where it really hit, where the rubber hit the road was, I went through six general contractors trying to find somebody that was professional, polished, problem solving, could think in an innovative way and trying new technologies and new processes. And eventually I didn't find it. So I said, screw it. I'll become the GC and do it myself. And so that, what kind of working through those mechanics of like, hey, it's Tuesday afternoon. Why is there no electrician? It's Thursday morning. Where's the plumber? Like the basics that everybody deals with, working through that. But then seeing that even with building offsite, it didn't solve those problems. I realized that something was wrong. To be even more specific. So my co-founder and one of my best friends is my next door neighbor. And we kind of did a race. He built his traditionally stick built kind of by hand. I built mine offsite. He's still beaten. So all the time and cost savings that were advertised never materialized. And that was really, really frustrating to me because I looked at this and thought, well, I go to a car dealership, I point out a car, I buy it, and then I get the car 6 weeks later. Why is that not the way that we do housing? And it's not. So it was that disconnect between expectations of what it was going to be and then reality that was really frustrating.
Cool. Awesome. Well, I got a few questions. So
fire away.
All right. So just to, you know, talk to me like I'm a 3-year-old. So you're basically, you build the houses offsite, like kind of modular in a way, right? So you don't actually build them right on the spot where you leave the stuff outside. It's just kind of, you said like Toyota manufacturer, just building nonstop cars, right? Yep. What do you say it was, what did they build?
Right now, the tack time at the Toyota facilities is 57 or 58 seconds. So a new Camry drives off the line. Well, so to be clear, it's a long assembly line. Yep. So that car from start to finish might've been on the line for several hours. But then at the end of the line, if you just sat there and sat outside the building, boom, 56 seconds, another one, boom, 50. I mean, it's driving off the line. Like, that's how fast and efficient automobile manufacturing is.
Yes. So let me ask you this other question. There's a stigma, right? Of saying, hey, you're building modular homes, right? They're a piece of junk. They're bad. Yep. They're bad. I mean, so how do you tackle that?
I think part of it is showing people the quality. So like a lot of our first projects were $4 million homes. And it was just showing folks, this is not double wide housing. And I know the industry has a bad branding and bad PR. We as Americans tend to have a bias towards, oh, that's handmade. I mean, look at the Etsy explosion. People love the idea that it's handmade. But when it comes to quality control and precision, your phone, your computer, your table, your, like, everything else is built by machines, to include automobiles. And so we're trying to break that stigma by showing all of the benefits of machine made exist, but we're going to add in this extra layer of customization. Because when people think of prefab, they usually think of somebody's telling me what my structure needs to look like. And we're saying, no, your structure, your ADU, single family, multifamily, your apartment buildings, whatever that is, that needs to match your neighborhood. It needs to look like your neighborhood according to the way your neighborhood's building codes are, et cetera. So what we've done is build a software and robotic manufacturing process that connects custom with high volume standard manufacturing. The cheesy analogy I use is, imagine if you could send a picture of the Death Star to a software, and then that software would sit around and they would digest and go, all right, you're going to need black Lego bricks that are 4 long, and you're going to need 14 of them. And then you're going to need 12 gray Lego bricks. And all of a sudden it spits out an instruction sheet and says, Javier, here's how you build the Death Star. It took standard little building blocks and told you how to build this complex structure from the standard.
Dang. Okay. All right. So here's some more questions, right? Okay. Awesome.
Fire away.
So that's pretty cool, because like my thought process has always been this, right? And I know, correct me if I'm wrong, but like in my neighborhood, right? We moved in, there's still some new construction, right? And the materials get delivered on site, right? The trusses, whatever, some of the sheathing for the roof, except whatever it is, right? The wood panels, all that stuff, the 2x4s, everything, the frames. And I see them there for 1, 2, 3, and it rains. Hails, there's just the environment. And I'm thinking to myself, okay. And then they put them up, right? And then it still rains, you know, and it still hails or whatever, right? And I'm like, I'm sitting there like saying, that stuff is wet. Like at some point, like, isn't that bad for the property? Like, then you're going to put sheetrock on. What if it doesn't dry and they're going to close it up? And And give an example, right before, when I started real estate investing, I sold my house, I cut all my expenses, and I moved my family into a townhome. We used every corner of that townhome. And it was brand new built, right? We're renting. And when we were in there for like 6 months, they told us to leave. Actually, we were on vacation. We came back and said, you got to leave because they were all moldy. All the inside was moldy because at some point water fell through.
Yeah.
Right. And I guess they didn't dry. It was mold. They had to take kitchen cabinets out, cut it halfway. It did a lot. Okay. So anyway, so I made a big question, a short question, very long, but so tell me about that, right? I'm sure you've thought about this, or in your prefab, it's in a factory, right? You know, controlled environment. So what are your thoughts?
Can you imagine if I said, hey, here's the deal. I'm going to dump 10,000 parts in the driveway and you're going to build that Camaro. You'd be like, that's a stupid way to do it. And I'm going to sit there. I'm going to sit in the sun. I'm going to get rained on. You have all these, that's how we build houses. And so there's so many different layers to this problem, but what you're tapping on is the quality control aspect. There's no standardization. And to be fair, like, inspectors aren't even certified engineers, so they don't even necessarily know exactly all the ramifications of what to look for. So we reinvent the wheel every single time we build a house in this country. It's a new site, it's a new process, and there's no efficiency gain. That's why if you look at construction productivity over the last 80 years, in the last 50, we're less productive as an industry than we were. So 1970, you can actually build a house better, faster, cheaper than you can in 2020. We've gone backwards. And when you tap into manufacturing levels of efficiency, when it comes and shows up to the job site, it's already weather wrapped. It's already tight. You've already got all the stuffing inside. Our vision as a business is to get to the point where you are 30 days from permits to keys everywhere you build. That's unheard of right now in the site built world.
Oh, holy crap, 30 days.
Yeah.
And that was like a year and a half. Yeah.
Exactly. But when you look at it, it need not be a year and a half. It's a lot of miscommunication, a lot of the job site sitting around. It doesn't need to be like that. And so when you think about this from a homeowner or even an investor perspective, imagine if you knew, and again, I know this sounds outlandish, but imagine if you knew you could call a company up and say, hey, I want a three-story apartment building in this area. I need it to match this jurisdiction. I need 100 rooms, whatever it is. And then you knew within 30, okay, maybe I'm way off, 90 days. You could have that apartment building stood up. It'd be a game changer. Because then you're not, as the investor, not buying off the uncertainty of what's the market going to do? What are rents going to do? What's the Fed going to do? What's the local building department going to do? You can just look at it and go, land equals house.
Even the carry cost. Yeah. If you got a $10 million loan, I mean, at a 6% interest, I mean, that's $600 a year, you know? So
we do not expect enough as society from our construction industry, because to us, 12 to 18 months is normal. That's just what it is. It doesn't need to be that way.
Super cool. So I got a little beef with you, and okay. You said, what's up with handmade stuff? Man, I would love to fly on a handmade airplane. I'm just kidding. Right? It's true. You were saying that, you know, a lot of your big things are, yeah, it's true, right? Somebody hand makes your table. It's beautiful and it's handmade. Yeah. It's not like perfect because, you know, you got some human error, but it's beautiful, right? Maybe your kitchen table, right? But hell no, man. I don't want nobody hand making my plane. You know what I mean? I was going to fall off. You know, I don't know. How hard can you... Can you tighten one of those wrenches in the wing or something, right? One of those nuts. I don't know. Just saying.
And in housing, the handmade part gets into the stuff on the inside, your paint, your lights, your cabinets, your countertops, the stuff that really you experience. But the vast majority of cost and time and construction goes into all the stuff that you don't see. Yep. Electrical, your plumbing, your mechanicals, your insulation, your framing, like all the other trades that sit behind the sheetrock. And so there is a time and a place for human beings, and they can problem solve and they can create gorgeous art. But when it comes to like repetitive manufacturing like tasks, let's outsource that to computers and robots.
That is awesome. So pronounce the name of your company. It's Agoras.
Agoras. So it's actually derived from the Greek word Agora.
Yes,
yeah, exactly. The Greek Agora was the central marketplace where the free people and the common people came to spend their life and to have discourse and to think and innovate, etc. And we wanted that same mindset where we are building structures. It could be four stories. It could be one story. It doesn't matter. This is where people's lives take place. And this is a core human need that's getting more and more difficult. I mean, housing is becoming a national issue. And we never wanted to lose the fact, even though we're a tech company, we never wanted to lose that human feel of we're solving a real problem for real families and real human beings. This isn't about just the dollars and cents and the money. This is about solving a social problem.
So it's agorus.com.
Yes.
Okay. And then I'm in your website and I see a process. So kind of give me an idea, right? So tell me like the process, right? You know, who do you service? Who's your client? Or just kind of Give me some more info.
So in a nutshell, while we are trying to expand nationally as fast as we can, there's so much demand here in Southern California. We're largely focused in Los Angeles and San Diego areas and trying to get out of that quickly, but scaling up across the country is expensive and tricky. And so what we do is we end up meeting with a developer or a builder and saying, hey guys, the sooner you can involve us in the process, the more value we can add and the more the technology can enable you. And so usually the ideal project is customer says, hey, I got to build. Like right now, this in a couple hours, I'm headed over to our community we're building here in San Diego. So it's 40 units. Developer came to us and said, hey, we've got this. Look, it's a two-story townhome because of X, Y, Z. And then they send it to us. We engineer it. We start to draft it and value it all together. And then we send that to the software. When they're ready and the job site's ready, we manufacture it and send it out to them. Now, the way that we do this is we send it as 2D panels. So imagine, you know, flat pack furniture where it's super dense and you just kind of condense it all together. That's how we do it on the trucks. And then at the job site, you're essentially pulling these pieces off with a crane, setting them onto the foundation, connecting the pieces together, and it's off to the races.
Yeah, you got a cool video. When you guys go to his website, it's going to be on there like the whole process already, right?
I think
like 100 times it repeats itself. It's pretty cool.
Yep.
Yeah. So you're doing this for developers, for builders. Are you guys just providing that service, or are you guys doing your own building for your own like developments?
So we are We have a small development arm that we use for prototype kind of R&D type builds and projects. We are not at the scale yet where we have our own development arm. Someday we may, but in the interim, we generally have partners that we work with that are eager to tap into innovation. They have all the development prowess. We have all the technology and innovation, and we usually marry up. And so, for example, if an investor or a homeowner wanted it to build a home better and faster and cheaper, we would point them to our kind of partners and say, hey, these folks are great. Let's work with them. And then we collaborate with the developer and builder to execute that home or that community.
Awesome. And you say right now, are you only doing California or your other states?
Right now, we're only in California. But if for example, if we had the right pull demand into a new state, so we are doing projects in Arizona as well, looking at Texas and Florida pretty quickly thereafter. As we start to expand, Carolinas are actually on the roadmap as well. There's an opportunity for us to test and try out expanding into new states with developers. We just eat a shipping cost in the process, and gas is expensive. But I don't want anybody to get turned off or think that prefab is not available to them, because it is and it's coming. Our vision is to be doing north of 100,000 units a year by the end of the decade. So this is big in scope.
Well, yeah, because as we're chatting here, I'm thinking about my people that I know, my friends that are in Florida, you know, doing these massive subdivisions built to rent, you know, 200, 300, 400.
Yes.
And it just like, it's a big deal right now. Even the big REITs and funds are throwing so much money at these built to rents. I'm just thinking to myself, man, if you can build these super quick, right? Like that'd be amazing, right? Especially if you can do it in Florida where they already have the subdivision ready and just, you know, they're
boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. You just knock it out. Right. So any build to rent people come out to you guys and like, you know, try to partner up or just.
We would actually, so it's one of the areas that the market is expanding so rapidly. And if you have folks that are in the build to rent space that are interested, I would love to get connected because it's a great way. And ironically, a lot of the build for rent developers have told us they truly value the extra quality that we have and the precision, because they're going to own and service that home for 20 years. Whereas a lot of other builders are looking at how to get into it as cheaply and quickly as possible, because the quality control is somebody else's problem. And so when you think about a precision machine built house, it just lasts longer and is better built.
Yeah, makes total sense. So let's talk about this, right? Cost. So what would you say, like, as far as cost, you save money on time, right?
Well, yes.
What about the cost to build a 40 unit or even a house, or just kind of give me some examples?
So the net savings to a customer should be a solid 10 to 20% when all is said and done. When we factor in waste, you factor in time, you factor in material rejects, you factor in all the benefits to the follow-on trades. And so ultimately where we look at advertising to developers specifically is, it's not just how much we can save you on that unit, but if you can recycle your capital and you could then double your output capacity in a given year, that's that many more units that you can sell. And so then all of a sudden the net profitability goes through the roof, because that's where the developer, the investor makes their money, is getting more units built.
Oh, for sure. Another quick question. So, you know, they get delivered and you got the trades coming in, and it's not hard for them, right? They don't need, it's not like you open a box and it has no instructions on it, right? Like, oh shoot, you know, like I bought a standing desk. It didn't come with instructions, but I just figured it out. I had like extra nuts and bolts, but you know what?
Yeah.
Throw extra ones, right? Just extra.
Yeah. No, so what we try and do, and it depends on what the customer wants, but we try and pack as many of the trades as we possibly can into the product offsite. And so that you get to the point where ideally it should be essentially a little bit of just connections, get an inspection, throw sheetrock on the walls, and you're off to the races.
So any trade can pretty much, it's easy for them to do, right? It's not brain surgery.
Ideally, we want to get to the point where you don't even necessarily even need to be a specialized trade. If you're a general contractor, you have enough knowledge to make the connections, because you should not hear a saw go at the job site. You should not pull out a set of wire strippers. Like, it should be everything is ready for you and you connect rather than build.
Oh, nice. So then you start connecting, you have your inspections, and then you start connecting some more, you have your inspections, start connecting some more, and you're done.
Yeah. And ideally where we stay focused is from slab to sheetrock. Because ultimately, we don't want to get in the business of saying, this is the right paint color, this is the right light, cabinets, countertops. All that stuff is customer choice. But by the time you've gotten to drywall, the home is very close to being finished.
Yeah. And you just pretty much leave it ready for the roof to come on and that's it. Or is the roof already on?
So we actually panelize the roofs. And so we fly the roof cassettes in so that by the time we leave the job site, everything is weather tight, weather wrapped. You can just get right into the inside and start working on the sexy stuff, the stuff that you want to look at and touch and adds that homey feel,
not
the boring stuff that sits behind the sheetrock.
That is awesome. Man, you hit all my questions. So what are you guys looking for now, right? Like you guys have investors already. I know you said Toyota invested in your company. Are you guys looking for investors? Are you guys just looking for more partners, getting the word out? Or what can we do for you as a group here on this podcast?
I'm always looking for fellow partners that are eager to push this industry and this space forward. It takes a village to raise a startup. And so that can sometimes be customers, it can be partners, it can be investors, it can be networkers. If people are interested in finding a new way to build, then I'm game to connect and discuss kind of what the right fit looks like. So we're always looking for investors. We're always looking for customers. We're always looking for new talent and employees. The sky's the limit.
Awesome. Well, I didn't want to overlook the fact that you said that you were in the Navy SEALs, your Navy officer. I didn't forget. I just didn't, I didn't hit it right away. So, you know, thank you for your service. You know,
Not my service. You were. Ahead, no way.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Go ahead. Finish.
I was going to say, you might agree with this. It's not my service. Like, we had a great job. It's a ton of fun doing what you do. The real service is like the spouse that has to take care of three young kids while you're deployed. And you're like, that's real service.
That's the tough part, right? When you leave your family, your loved ones at home. But yeah. I was in Fort Bragg. I was out in DLI at the language school in Monterey. And I was in.
No way. What language did you study? I studied there too.
I did Spanish just because I already knew Spanish. I'm like, I just wanted to not do anything, you know. But I could have taken any language. I should have taken Chinese or something.
Yeah.
But I was an E1, so you know, I was getting paid like $650 a week. A month. it was gone in a weekend, right? On Monterey, it was gone. But just funny story, in one of our classes there, we had, because it's everybody, Air Force, Navy, Army. We had this Navy SEAL in there. And he walked in and he was, you know, I'm vertically challenged. I'm about 5'5". And he walked in. He's about 5'7", you know, a couple inches taller than me. He had, you know, he had a little bit of a gut. And, you know, he was just like, come on, man. Like, you're not Navy SEAL. Anyway, so somebody made fun of his gut. And he's like, all right, let's see who can do the most push-ups, like on your head, right? And he got up and he started doing like, I lost count. But he was just crushing everybody. He's like, when you're done, the next person gets on. He just... like his mind was just totally different. Like he was just not going to quit. And he was a pretty fun guy to hang out with. But anyways.
That's awesome. Here, hold my beer.
Yeah, for sure. So that's my Navy SEAL story. So that was the only time
I'm glad you had a good experience. You know, oftentimes no organization's perfect. And so, there's some people that don't necessarily represent the community well, but good to hear that you had a good experience.
Yeah, we definitely had a good experience. It was a great guy. He, you know, we helped him out with the Spanish. He had a hard time learning, but. He got it. You know, say, like, hey, man, just, you know, don't beat us up. You know, that was our thing. And nobody wanted to do PT with him either because he smoked everybody. Anyways,
that's awesome.
But definitely thank you. Thank you for your service. And
my pleasure.
If anybody needs to get a hold of you, what's the best way? I see here you have an Instagram account. Everything will be in the show notes. It's Instagram. It's AGORUS build. Right. And, I just clicked on that right now. And I'm actually going to follow that right now. So you'll have an extra follower there.
Right on. Easiest way to connect with us is oftentimes through the website or just me directly on LinkedIn. That kind of tends to be the professional stepping off point.
Sure.
And always looking to connect with folks.
Yeah. LinkedIn. There we go. It'll be on the show notes. All the links will be on there for everybody who wants to reach out. And Gary, well, thank you so much for being on the show. And before I let you go, we're going to go to the best part, which is my favorite part of every show, and I'm going to share my screen. There we go. So this is a game I like to call the Naked Truth Roulette, and it'll show up here shortly. There we go.
Oh man.
Yep. It's called the Naked Truth Roulette, and I'm going to ask you three random questions, and it's got nothing to do with real estate business. Just, you know, let's find out if Garrett is not a robot. You know. Yeah, so let's just find out. Just some random questions. So let's roll. Here we go.
I love it. That's awesome.
All right. Let's see. First question for Garrett. Let's see. Here we go. What is the worst chore for you to do?
Oh man. I know this sounds ridiculously petty. I hate making my bed because to me it's like the exercise in futility of I'm gonna go to work. And I'm going to come back tonight and I'm going to undo it. And so my wife absolutely hates it. She loves like coming home to a made bed. But for me, as petty as that sounds, it just seems so like unnecessary. So I hate it and I never do it.
Oh, well, those 12 years in the Navy, every time you had to make your bed, right? No.
yeah, exactly.
Or at least through your training. So awesome. All right, cool. Yeah, I don't like to make the bed, and I get a little bit of the eye all the time. Make your bed, at least pull the covers, you know? Anyway,
the secret for me was, and you probably did this in boot camp too, where you don't actually make your bed. You just sleep on top of it and you keep it nice and tight in the morning, where you just roll out.
Yeah, sleep on the floor. Check out the next question that we got for you, Garrett. You see that on there? You missed it. It said, if you could take any celebrity on a date, who would it be?
Oh, man, that is tricky. I would say,
dead or alive.
I don't know anything about her personally, but one of my very first crushes that I've never given up on was Charlize Theron.
Oh, my God.
And so, again, I have no idea what the conversation would be like, but purely just from like that childhood crush when you're, you know, a teenager or in your early 20s, that would be the first person that comes to mind.
Awesome. All right. Good choice. Good choice. First time I heard that one. So, all right. Third question for Garrett. We're almost done. Probably the hardest thing you ever done, man. Here we go. Answer this question. Let's see what we got. All right. How do you feel about putting pineapple on your pizza?
I love it. And I would go one step further. So a little known truth. A lot of people think about pineapple going with Canadian bacon. Got it. What you really need to try, though, is pineapple with pepperoni. Just kind of mix the Hawaiian in with the American. It's delicious.
All right. So I've done the ham, the ham and pineapple. I've done just the pineapple. I've never done pepperoni and pineapple.
It's great because you get the sweet of the pineapple, but you get a little bit more salt and spice out of a pepperoni than you do kind of more of a Canadian bacon or a ham. Strongly recommend it.
Awesome. Garrett, you survived the Naked Truth Roulette. Thanks. Thanks for being a good sport and answering those questions. Anything else?
My pleasure.
You want to mention before we let you go?
No, you've been outstanding. It's been a pleasure to join you and your listeners on this wild and crazy ride that's life.
Awesome. Thanks, Garrett, for being on the show. I am your host, Javier. Don't lose your shirt. Just as promised, I like to give out free stuff, some tools and tips that's actually helped me in my business. There's nothing out there like getting some free stuff that people have spent a lot of time, energy in putting together. It's like a referral. Somebody asked me for an electrician. You don't know what kind of brain damage I had to go through to give you this good referral for an electrician. You got to appreciate referrals from people, okay? Because they went through a lot to find that one good person. So I'm going to give you my due diligence template for buying apartment buildings. It's attached to monday.com. It is an affiliate link, so they're going to send me a kickback. Not a lot, but a little bit. But you can either download it as an Excel, or you can put it on monday.com. Monday.com is pretty cool because it's a project management platform software. It's super cool. I use it all the time for my social media, for my team, tracking deals, doing tasks for everybody. It's actually pretty good. You can track construction. It's a project management platform. It's really cool. Monday, like the day, monday.com. So my due diligence checklist is there for free for you.
This has been The Naked Truth. Our mission is to give it to you raw. If you got value from this episode, you're invited to leave an honest written review and share this episode with a friend. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.